Tantor Audio presents Eye Shot by Taylor Adams, narrated by Tom Zingarelli. 1. For a killer, William Tapp looked pretty stupid right now. He cut a shaggy brown silhouette of twigs and crunchy grass. Like the swamp thing, dried out and crispy after a trek in the Mojave sun, half walking and half climbing over a current of loose rocks skittering down slope. His raw breaths whistled. His kneecaps squealed and popped. His beleaguered heart struggled to keep blood everywhere it needed to be. The outfit wasn't helping. It was a homemade sniper's ghillie suit, volleyball netting tied with layers of dyed jute threads and desert underbrush for camouflage. But it was like wearing a goddamn greenhouse. Crouching was awkward, running was difficult, and taking a piss had been disastrous the one time he tried. He reached the summit under a hard blue sky, dropped his rucksack, Cheetos, Swedish fish, a six-pack of grape-flavored energy drinks, and gathered his equipment. From here the view was striking, a vivid panorama of Nevada scrublands and violent mountains that could have scored a Pulitzer. Tapp didn't notice. He slipped the ghillie hood over his face, felt the prickle of dead grass on his lips, and like a descending shadow, morphed into the prairie. Now William Tapp looked like nothing at all.
"Look out!"
James Eversman stomped the brakes and the RAV4 lurched like a cigarette boat dropping anchor. For a second, the world uncoupled. His seatbelt yanked him and he tasted a hot splash of copper. He couldn't tell if he'd banged his mouth on the steering wheel or just bitten his tongue. His wife Elle fared better, as her reflexes were sharpened by 3 coffees a day. She caught herself on the dashboard with her palms, her chocolate brown hair covering her face, and hissed something that sounded to James like crap-ass. Sometimes her profanity didn't quite come out right. It wasn't a crash, but it felt like one. The parked cop car, a brown and white Ford with dusty windows, had materialized in the middle of the road on the last bend of a 70-mile-per-hour S-curve. The highway was carved into the earth here, and granite walls crowded the single-lane road like blinders. Had James been a heartbeat slower on the brake pedal, or distracted, or speeding, or... He pushed those thoughts out of his mind because they were unproductive. He knew what highway collisions looked like from EMT Basic, wherein a colleague had once described the human body as curiously tomato-like. As the blood returned to his head and the acrid odor of burnt brake pads came sweeping in, James stared at the parked Paiute County patrol car not 6 paces from his front bumper, and allowed himself to quietly marvel. Wow.
Huh?
Elle flipped her hair from her eyes.
That almost sucked.
Indeed.
Why'd he stop in the middle of the road?
I don't... James's throat dried up. Well, here he comes. He was a compact little sheriff's deputy, approaching at a trot with his sidearm wobbling on his hip, and one hand raised to steady a comically oversized campaign hat. It was almost a sombrero. He was coming from the road's beveled gravel shoulder on the right, where James noticed a second vehicle pulled up and parked snugly against the oxidized walls, a newish white truck. It didn't appear damaged, just empty. James had time to wonder, where's the driver? Elle held in a laugh.
I think Smokey Bear wants his hat back.
Don't stare.
Only you can prevent car accidents.
Elle, please don't stare. He thumbed to the power window, and it felt like depressurizing an airlock. Thick air poured inside, and his voice disappeared under mouthfuls of swallowed heat and alkali dust. The deputy's footsteps sounded sticky, like the blacktop was melting under the sun. James took a weak breath and tried not to cough it out. He was nervous, and he hated himself for it. Admittedly, this was a new experience. He had never even been pulled over before, which he had always attributed to his remarkably unremarkable driving. Elle had once compared him to one of those little circular vacuuming robots rich people buy. What were they called again?
Oh, Christ!
The cop caught his breath and rested one palm on the door.
I should have had my light bar on.
It's okay, James said, without really meaning it. He was startled by how young the deputy was. This guy was fresh out of high school, small-framed, acne-encrusted, and apparently trying to grow a mustache. It was going poorly.
I was just... This road gets 3 cars a day, tops. Shoot! Sorry.
The kid sniffed, straightened, and pointed to the white truck on the roadside. This truck is abandoned all the way out here. Doors unlocked, engine running, $40 and a money clip in the center console, like some guy stepped out to take a leak and never came back. Just sitting here, abandoned on the shoulder.
Parked on the shoulder? Elle cocked her head. Maybe he was on to something.
James inflated his fake smile. Deputy Doogie Hauser didn't notice. He had a strange way of speaking. He over-inflected the first word of every sentence to deliver every idea like a PowerPoint bullet, almost like he was hiding an accent. He apologized again and again and asked if they had seen anyone hitchhiking or walking along the roadside. Of course they hadn't. The nearest town was Mosby, a shit-splat silver mine burg the deputy estimated to be 11 clicks east. Why go by kilometers, James wondered. So leaving a functioning vehicle behind out here in this Mars-like world of rock and sky was fairly strange and possibly dangerous. The deputy said another thing that bothered James.
You a cop?
No. The question hit him between the eyes.
Why? Fire? Rescue? Security?
The kid squinted under the brim of that stupid hat with the solemn importance of a gypsy.
I swear I can pick out an emergency guy from the regular civvies. It's in the eyes. You have busy eyes.
James shrugged politely. Nope.
He took a few medic classes, Elle said. A long time ago.
Nah, the deputy sighed. That doesn't count.
Says the cop in the sombrero, James thought. He imagined Elle was thinking something wittier, but he hoped she would keep it to herself. He let the awkward moment pass and asked as sincerely as he could, How can I help? Deputy Doogie Hauser's eyes thinned.
You see anyone walking alone out here on the side of the road, elderly, confused, whatever, you call me. This desert eats people. It's a big county, and we're a small department.
How small?
You're talking to 50% of it.
Then, with a polite farewell nod, the cop turned and paced back to his patrol car, his size 8 boots slurping on the molten blacktop.
And he's like 30% hat, Elle whispered.
James nodded absently, watching. This desert eats people. The door thumped like a gunshot. Brake lights lit up as the deputy squeezed his car off the road and motioned them through with a circular wave. James rolled up his window and raced on past, again sneaking a sidelong glance at that mysterious white truck. Nothing special about it. Its windows blazed with reflected sunlight, rendering the interior unknown. He caught a flash of a bumper sticker, MPR, stenciled in all caps, and in another flash the truck was behind them, going, going, and gone forever. For a while he idly wondered what MPR stood for. Mexican Public Radio? As the highway curved through more bends, the granite grew sharper and poked through the earth like a bone-tearing skin. James made a point to check every shadow and scan every stretch of plains for a humanoid walking figure, just in case. He wasn't a paramedic, not even close, but he knew just enough to be useful in a crisis and to wish he hadn't been a salesman instead.
Elle exhaled. Good thing you drive like a Roomba, honey.
He nodded. Roomba, that's what they're called. Uncomfortable silence descended, and the tedium of the road took over again. In another few minutes, they would revert to the unhappy people they had been before this little distraction, sharing cold pauses under the hum of tires on pavement. That little jolt of adrenaline had been nice, he realized, and he wished for a little more of it today, if only to appease the elephant in the car a while longer. "Do you want to talk about it?" he asked. She shook her head. Good. He didn't want to talk about it, either. It was a long drive to Tulsa, and it wasn't half over. James and L. Eversman stopped for gas 6 miles later at the Mojave Fuel and Food, a quiet little place with 70s-era fuel pumps and a roller grill of 70s-era hot dogs. Over a pair of concrete picnic tables and a park jeep, a bone-white signboard welcomed them to Mosby's city limits, population 88, and underneath, in blocky motel font, aliens crashed in Roswell trying to find Mosby. 5 exclamation points, James observed. 4 wasn't enough. He was too easygoing to be a grammar Nazi, but he had the eye for it. Back in California, he represented 11 local radio stations as an account executive, although his soft hands made the handshakes awkward. No one trusts a man who doesn't work with his hands. More than once before a big client meeting, he'd considered callousing his palms with steel wool.
"You think he's watching us?"
Elle asked him furtively as he cranked the gas release and stepped out under the shade of the fueling lane. The heat was more manageable here, but the air was still as thick as gelatin.
"Who?" "The guy in the Jeep."
She pointed with her head.
"Black Jeep, over there."
James peered an inch over the RAV4's roof. It was a lifted rig, powered with dust, pulled parallel to the fuel and food, with a calm disregard for the chalk parking lines. Sunlight on tinted glass painted silhouettes of two headrests and a bulging asymmetrical head staring directly at them. It was so oddly misshapen, would a hat even fit on it, that it took two glances to cross the uncanny valley and register it as human. It didn't move or breathe. James shivered.
"I can feel his eyes on the back of my head."
She thumbed the door lock and blocked her face with an elbow.
"Crawling up and down. I hate being stared at."
2 minutes, then we're gone.
No wonder they tested A-bombs here.
This state blows. He nodded. I have no idea why Mexico wanted it back. He put the gas on credit. The old-fashioned fueling nozzle was canted and stuck. As he tugged it free, he caught motion in his far periphery. The black Jeep man's head was bobbing behind the sunlit glass now, and the asymmetrical part of the silhouette revealed itself to be a walkie-talkie receiver clamped to his ear with cigar fingers. He lowered the radio and swung his driver door open with a metallic squeal. Elle sank in her seat. James pumped gas and tried to look nonchalant. It wasn't working. Out climbed a bear-like man draped in a trail duster that swished a curtain of oilcloth with each step. He could have been the Marlboro man, except there was also something oddly foreign about him. He looks like the kind of asshole James Bond would garrote on his way into a secret Soviet base. His hair was knotted into a black ponytail, and his 6-inch beard was streaked with pewter. He kicked his door shut and paced to the fuel and food, carrying a silver coffee thermos with a bright circular marking on it, too far away for James to discern.
"Hello, Kitty," Elle whispered.
"What?"
"It's a Hello Kitty sticker on his thermos."
"Oh," James' gut squirmed. "Oh, good." The Soviet cowboy passed the building's double doors without entering and instead took a seat at a concrete table under the Mosby signpost, facing them directly. He was less than 20 feet away now, with the barren land canvas behind him, quietly sipping his stupid thermos. His eyes were locked on Elle again. She peered over the dashboard and sighed. The fuel pump ticked like a metronome. Something rattled brokenly inside it, so James checked the gray digital screen. Only a gallon had gone in. He jostled the pump impatiently. He was waiting for Elle to say something. Something like,
"Don't try to confront him, James. Just let it go. Don't be a hero. It'll only escalate things."
He waited a few long seconds with his hand on the pump before realizing it wasn't coming. She knew that he was a pacifist. He couldn't even ask a waitress to take a burnt steak back to the kitchen without blushing. He hoped she would say it anyway, to be sweet, as she sometimes did.
"I've decided," she said.
He did a double take. She sat on her hands in the passenger seat, eyes down, lips pursed. He knew the topic had boomeranged back to it again, and this time there was no avoiding it. "Decided what?" he asked her, with one eye on the Soviet.
"I don't want to get pregnant again."
"You're sure?"
"Yes."
James felt his lip burst warmth in his mouth. It hadn't been bleeding much before, but suddenly it reminded him of those candies that squirted fruit juice when you chewed them. The metallic taste turned his stomach, but he welcomed the distraction because anything was better than this conversation, right now, about it. Hell, he'd punch the Soviet cowboy in the mouth right now just to buy another few minutes.
"I'm sorry, James," her jaw quivered. "I can't do it anymore."
He spat in the dirt, bright red. The Soviet took a swig from his Hello Kitty thermos, threw open his duster, and slapped a sheet of yellowed paper on the table. He carefully spaced 3 stubby pencils, feathered a hand over each, and selected the middle one.
"What's he doing?" Elle asked.
"Doesn't matter." He leaned inside to face her with his palms on the RAV4's hot roof. "We're almost back on the road." A scratching sound underscored his voice, like snakes coiling in dry brush. It was charcoal on paper, a Morse code wrap of long and short scrapes. The Soviet was sketching in big strokes, with his veined tongue hanging over his beard. "He's drawing a picture of us," James realized. "Or maybe just L."
"It's the hope that's killing me," she said quietly. "I think."
"How?" she sighed. "How, L?"
"I dread seeing the test come up positive. I loathe those two pink lines. Because to be devastated, you have to be happy first. And all I see is another miscarriage in 3 months. And unlike you, James, I'm having a hell of a hard time seeing every one of them as a human soul."
He ran his hands through his sandy hair, already dulling as his 30s approached. He had made a point of naming every one of their children, and he could recite their names, starting 3 Januaries ago after they married. First Darby, then Jason, then Adelaide, who almost finished the second trimester and poisoned Elle with hope. Then Carrie, then Ross, then, well, they'd named almost all of them. The last one, 6 weeks ago, seemed to be the final straw. That was when an exhausted Elle had decided she wanted to start reusing names, which offended James. It felt unconscionably cold. If there's even an outside chance of a human life existing, the least you can do is give it a name and not reuse it.
"We'll make it happen," he said. "You don't know that."
He imitated her doctor's Swahili accent.
"It's not impossible. It's just unlikely."
"Yes, having a baby is unlikely."
She rolled her eyes but managed a small smile. "Unlikely is our car transforming into a large talking robot. Even though it's a Japanese car, I'm not holding my breath for that." "No, that's impossible," James said. "Unlikely is winning the lottery."
"Not holding my breath for that either."
"People win all the time."
"Then prove it. Buy 1 million tickets."
"Sure," James paused. "Are we talking about the lottery or sex?" She didn't laugh. The joke hung in the air, unacknowledged. Her face was downturned, so he kissed her forehead and smelled green apple from whatever bargain bin shampoo she had used back at the motel in Fairview. He saw constellations of freckles by her eyes, and tears perched on her eyelashes like little raindrops. The fuel pump ticked. 10 gallons. The Soviet switched pencils, twirled one across his knuckles, and his strokes became shorter. He must have been on the fine details now. Every few seconds he paused to rub delicate shadows with the pad of his thumb. Then he looked up at James with a dark glower, as if to say, "Get out of the way." James dug his feet in and spat a glob of syrupy blood. He wanted badly now to confront the man, stupid idea as it was, because it would at least be something. Maybe if he dealt with a small problem here at the gas station, the huge one would feel smaller. He once heard that the crisis of modern masculinity was that so many problems existed today which couldn't be solved with a punch to the face. As punching faces wasn't James' strong suit, he had figured this made him well adapted to the modern world. He was sensitive, intelligent, and a terrific listener, but none of this helped Elle or their dead unborn children. Right now, he just wanted to punch a face. He heard his father's words, utterly dark and alien, even inside his own head. "Be polite, be courteous, but have a plan to kill everyone you meet." The fuel pump clicked. All done. Elle's smile evaporated.
"Do you really believe all the optimistic crap you say?"
"I do," he lied. He crumpled the receipt and slammed the door hard enough to rattle the glass. She wiped her eyes with her palm. He gunned his soccer mom Toyota, skidded back onto the highway, and floored it. Then he rolled down his window.
"James, what are you doing?"
Tooted the horn and flipped the Soviet cowboy a cheery one-finger salute. "Yep," he said with a lump in his throat. "I just did that." She gasped.
"Please drive fast now."
With a stomach full of swallowed blood, he watched the man shrink into a stick figure in the rearview mirror. He had swiveled around on his seat to watch them leave. The mysterious walkie-talkie—shit, James had forgotten about the radio—was back out in his hand. It was too far to read an expression, but James imagined a smug grin on that weathered face, and he hoped he hadn't just made the biggest mistake of his life in a county with a police force of 2. "Why did I do that?"
"Honey?"
He saw the speedometer pushing 100 and tapped the brakes. And that's the story of how I got us murdered.
If he follows us, she said, I'm going to punch you.
The Soviet cowboy didn't, which was somehow worse. They had blown Mosby's outer limits and were 2 miles into the Badlands when the Toyota's radio, which had caught only electronic slush for the last 40 miles, registered a crackle snap of writhing static, and under it, a human voice. 2. William Tapp's radio hissed, signaling a connection. He was eating Cheetos, lifting them to his mouth with a pair of medical forceps to avoid contaminating his fingers with orange dust. This one was number 18. He couldn't help but count things by force of habit. Usually the bags contained somewhere in the ballpark of 130 Cheetos, but lately the average had dropped to around 115, and even 104 in one bag last year. He chalked it up to the tough economy. A verdict on the California couple in the yellow Toyota? He hadn't decided yet. Before answering his headset, he let a 19th Cheeto sit on his tongue, unchewed, where it would soak and swell into a mushy glob to be swallowed whole. James and Elle heard only two fragments of conversation, mid-sentence and stilted like channel scanning an old analog television. The first sounded like 4 hours left. The second was black eye, spoken as one word. Then the garble reached a sharp peak and the anomaly passed like blue sky lightning, leaving them in stunned silence. Elle twirled the volume dial. Was that? No. James was certain the voice didn't belong to the Soviet. It was wrong. It was thin, weedy, produced by scarred vocal cords and a compact chest. The speaker also seemed to have something in his mouth, occupying his tongue like a piece of candy. He remembered once hearing that Abraham Lincoln had a raspy little voice, famously at odds with his grand persona, and for some reason this was exactly what the radio voice sounded like. Yep, Abraham Lincoln, the ghost of history's favorite Republican, just came on 92.7 FM and scared the hell out of them.
Could be talk radio, James said weakly.
4 hours left, Elle said. Until what?
I don't know.
Where will we be in 4 hours?
Arizona. He checked the GPS unit cradled on the dash. It'll be getting dark by then. We're just a half hour from the interstate, and from there it will be a straight shot over the Rockies. We'll leave this nightmare factory of a place far, far behind. Deal? She nodded with colorless cheeks. He accelerated.
You okay?
Who just leaves a functioning vehicle out here?
Her voice was dull, zombie-like.
With $40 and a money clip, 10 miles out of town when it's 100 degrees out?
James had forgotten about that lovely episode. There were plenty of possible explanations, but all of them were only possible and not particularly convincing. He focused on the road instead, which rose and fell in lazy humps. The terrain became rough, like crumpled paper, as they approached the foothills, with odd pillows of plateaued earth jammed together to form stair steps. The only reminders they weren't on Mars came from the yucca trees dotting the landscape like hunched scarecrows. If you watched them long enough, you'd swear you saw a few walking. Elle watched the scenery pass. She had slipped into one of her trances, into what he had once called her photographer's 1,000-yard stare. The Sacramento Journal had once named her number 2 on a list of 20 local artists to watch. James had hung that framed page in the dining room back in California, and it was now brown-boxed with everything else they owned, in the back seats gently rattling. It had been published 4 years ago. She had since dumped her cameras on Craigslist.
Don't worry, James said. I've seen a lot of horror movies. Nothing bad ever happens in deserts.
She chuckled. He thumbed the radio dial and made sure it was all the way off. Usually when you get a signal bleed, it's a local television affiliate. Maybe that was it. Part of him wanted to keep scanning for more, just in case there were more tantalizing clues. But really it was just a distraction. What mattered now was driving, moving forward, and not stopping until they reached Flagstaff, Arizona, as per schedule. They would be there by now, he realized grimly, if they hadn't veered 100 miles into the nuclear wasteland for Elle's stupid tourist trap gore museum.
Oh, hell, she said.
He saw it too.
A red roadblock appeared at the end of a half-mile straightaway, shimmering behind curtains of air and boiling puddles of sky. In another 30 seconds, the mirages dissolved, and the largest signboard turned legible. Flanked by highway barrels.
Rock slide. Detour.
He almost punched the steering wheel, but stopped himself. He needed to at least appear calm for Elle's sake. He had put her through enough today.
It's official, she crossed her arms. I hate this place.
At least there's a detour road, he said, so we don't have to turn around and drive past the guy I just gave the finger.
Dare you to.
I'll do you one better. He whined the brakes and approached the rock slide barricade. Every town we pass, I'll find the scariest person there and flip them off. By the time we get to our new house, we'll have a conga line of murderers following us.
Our new house, she said with a flickering smile. Honest to God, nothing sounds better.
He touched her hand. The house wasn't theirs yet. Neither were the jobs. He twirled a wheel and skidded right onto the detour. After hours of buttery asphalt, hitting a dirt road was a teeth-chattering shock. The route itself seemed fine enough, just a winding access road walled off by sandstone faces and scree piles. But he knew he'd feel different if the Toyota broke down all the way out here. Obviously, the rock slide on the pass gave them no choice. But he still felt like a character in the first act of a horror movie, pelted with popcorn by an exasperated audience. "Don't go in there, you idiots!" He stomped the gas and accelerated. Elle craned her head to watch the rearview mirror, as if expecting that black Jeep to materialize behind them.
4 hours left, she whispered cryptically, like a fortune teller. Black eye.
He drove faster. After 10 minutes of serpentine bends, the landscape opened up again, and the sight line suddenly stretched forever. They were on the rim of it. A mile-wide fishbowl of descending plains and oxidizing rock forming a walled horizon on all sides. It looked like a matte painting of an ancient caldera. Their detour road shot straight in and down like a hairline fracture, bisecting the valley and crossing a darkened riverbed on the bottom. Then it crawled up the opposite side.
Some detour, he thought. We'll be in Mexico by the time it loops back.
Elle jolted forward as if she had been electrocuted, making stabbing motions with a pointed finger, and James punched the brake.
What? See him?
See who?
Tell me I'm not crazy. Do you not see him?
Her voice pitched. He squinted in the white-hot sunlight and followed her index finger straight ahead. He had brought the RAV4 to a complete stop, which made him anxious. The Soviet cowboy could be pursuing them in his ass-ugly black Jeep right now. That was the real concern. That walking shadow of a man could appear behind them at any second, his engine bellowing like a monster truck, unencumbered by witnesses out here. He sighed.
All I see is desert, hon. Just look. You'll see him.
Her voice was a whisper under the loping motor. He noticed her finger was trembling. Something about the way she said him spooked him, too, like she was talking about the devil or something. The Toyota's windows creaked and popped around them, shattering the stillness, as if the outside air was depressurizing. That smell was back, too. Over the last 100 miles, he had noticed these badlands possessed a unique odor, the gunpowder of cracked rock mixed with the coastal stink of tidewater. He whiffed it again under the recycled air and felt nauseous.
You need glasses, she said, which wasn't untrue.
I see him. He or she, or it, was a tiny humanoid figure several 100 yards downhill in the crater, following the road, back turned, head hunched, arms straight-jacketed forward, dwarfed by the open land. A hitchhiker, maybe. Although James couldn't fathom how anyone could be stupid enough to walk alone out here. The sun would suck the moisture from your mouth in an hour. In 2 hours, your eyelids would be sandpaper. In 3, waist-deep in dementia and courting death. He ran his tongue over his sore and swelling lip.
Could this be the truck guy? Shady Slope Road, Elle said.
What? She pointed at a piece of driftwood propped beside the road. The letters had been burnt into the bleached grain with a poker or hot iron. The handwriting was strangely childish, with exaggerated loops and crushed spacing as the wood tapered. She sniffed.
That's not ominous at all.
Nope. Well, he decided, we sure as hell can't turn around. So he hit the gas and continued down the detour path now identified as Shady Slope Road, which was the opposite of shady.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?